So I'm going to try and keep this as brief and as simple as I possibly can. Historisa Samuel, Samuel. So this is from Forbes.com. Sam Bankman-Fried, a guy's name that I've currently been saying over the last couple of days because I've been doing a lot of research about the gent. Sam Bankman-Fried was one of the richest people in crypto, thanks to his FTX exchange and Alameda research trading firm before his empire came crashing down in November 2022, literally a week ago. After users began withdrawing their investments from FTX at a rapid pace, competitor Binance agreed to acquire the exchange on November the 8th, likely at a steep discount. It's a stunning fall from grace for Bankman-Fried, who had been heralded as a modern JP Morgan, for swooping in to save troubled crypto firms before his own firm blew up. The son of two Stanford law professors, he studied physics at MIT, Massachusetts Institute of Technology, and traded ETFs at a quant firm before pivoting to crypto trading in late 2017. So, for people that understand trading ETFs, working at a quant firm, like I said, I'm going to keep it simple. So, it's not important for you guys to know that. But you can go research it, of course, what ETFs are. You can also read about derivatives. I think there's a point here where they speak about derivatives and what quantitative trading is all about. Before pivoting to crypto trading in late 2017, he launched FTX in 2019 and grew it into one of the leading exchanges for buying and selling crypto derivatives. In early 2022, investors valued FTX and its US operations at a combined $40 billion. Most of his wealth, which peaked at an estimated $26.5 billion, was tied up in ownership of about half of FTX and a share of its FTT tokens. That's from Forbes.com. But who is Samuel? Just a little bit of background. Samuel Bankman-Fried was born March the 6th, 1992, also known by his initials SBF. Is an American entrepreneur, investor, and former billionaire like your boy Khanyizi. He's the founder and former CEO of FTX, a cryptocurrency exchange, FTX.us, its US affiliate, and Alameda Research, a quantitative cryptocurrency trading firm. FTX experienced a solvency crisis in late 2022, which led to a collapse in FTX's native cryptocurrency, FTT. Amid the crisis, Bankman-Fried announced he would wind down operations at Alameda Research and resigned as CEO of FTX, which filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy. Very good movie for you guys to watch is The Big Short, starring Ryan Gosling and Steven Carell, amidst a whole host of other celebrities as well in the movie. The Big Short in the movie tries to break down what derivatives are, how trading works, etc., etc., just to kind of get an understanding of some of the jargon, ETFs, and whatever other terms that are used in trading. Obviously, if you studied economics like me, if you understand finance, if you're a deep trader, you might know these things. You can also go on Google, you can go on Wikipedia, you can go on, I think, Investopedia, and you can go and research some of these terms, some of these fancy instruments and assets, intangible assets that people have come up with to make magical money that doesn't really exist. Bankman-Fried's net worth peaked at $26 billion in October 2022, which was last month. He had an estimated net worth of $10.5 billion. However, on November the 8th, 2022, amid FTX's solvency crisis, his net worth was estimated to have dropped 94% in a day to $991 million, according to the Bloomberg Billionaires Index, the largest one-day drop in the index's history. By November the 11th, a few days ago, 2022, the Bloomberg Billionaires Index considered Bankman-Fried to have no material wealth. Mark Zuckerberg in the last 12 months has lost $100 billion, and Amazon as a company has lost a market cap of over $1 trillion. What the fuck these numbers actually mean, how much money that actually is, I don't fucking know. I can't even begin to imagine. Before Bankman-Fried's wealth eroded in November 2022, Bankman-Fried was a major donor to the Democratic Party and many left-wing political causes. He was the second largest individual donor to Joe Biden in the 2020 election cycle, personally donating $5.2 million to Joe Biden, and donated $40 million to the Democratic Party during the 2022 US midterms elections. In South Africa, we don't get much of this. It's kind of new, finding out that Patrice Motsepe has actually funded the EFF and the ANC, that there's an Oppenheimer Trust that has funded some of these political parties, finding that Michiel Leroux, I think, is also a big political donor, and. Still hasn't been fully exposed and exploited. Some people are going to hide behind certain trusts and NPOs. For example, Cyril Ramaphosa's bank statements have still not been unsealed. So we don't know. We don't know who funded him. And the courts, which apparently are objective and rational, have not unsealed his bank statements, so we can see who's given him money. You know, part of the thoughts and the articles and the conversations you read is of a guy called Bernie Madoff. Bernie Madoff has run like the biggest Ponzi scheme in history. And he lost a lot of people money. Let me see if I can just find something quickly about Bernie. For people that have maybe never heard of him. You can go and research him yourself as well. But just the highlights. Like, Bernie Madoff wasn't like a normal scam artist, hush puppy, you know, Gucci billionaire type of gent. He was actually like a serious finance guru. Part of the reason I'm so fascinated is because if you read this book that I wrote, The Rise and Fall of the NSC, the National Savings Club, How I Made and Lost My Millions, there were times when some of my investors that I owed like over R1 million to when my business crashed, that told me that I was running a Ponzi scheme, that accused me of scamming them, running away with their money. So stories like this are always close to my heart. I'm always looking to learn and get better. I mean, when I created the National Savings Club, my goal was to build like this huge stock fell, take people's money, loan it out at good interest, invest in small and medium businesses, and try and make as much money for people as possible so that they can become rich. Loans business is fucking hard, and it was unsecured. So I lost a lot of money there. I lost money in my pig farming. I lost money with my cattle breeding, cattle farming. I lost money with my meter taxis, etc. So the business tanked. And when it tanked, I tried to explain to investors, this is what happened. I lost money, the business didn't work, but people didn't care. Yeah, you lost our money, you fucking stole our money and you're splurging. I'm a minimalist. I don't even have like a luxurious lifestyle to be living, not wearing fancy suits and taking pictures outside Ferraris and living in a fancy place. So it was kind of sad having people tell me that. But, you know, I decided to write the book to tell my story of what happened to the business itself. Not a lot of people write personal stories about business failures. I thought I would do that because I think there's a lot of lessons to learn from my experience and the experiences of others as well. Our Bernie. The Ponzi scheme, Bernie, was worth $64.8 billion. Bernard Lawrence Madoff was an American fraudster and financier who ran the largest Ponzi scheme in history, worth about $64.8 billion. He was at one time the chairman of the NASDAQ stock exchange. Now you start thinking of Marcus Yuster, chartered accountant, Steinhoff, working with these big, fancy business people. He advanced the proliferation of electronic trading platforms and the concept of payment for order flow, which has been described as a legal kickback. Bernie Madoff was an American financier and former NASDAQ chair who orchestrated the largest Ponzi scheme in history. So yeah, well, Sam Bankman-Fried. So the previous article I was reading was from Wikipedia. And obviously Wikipedia puts references of where they got the information from, just so that you guys know. Last article I'm going to read is from Fortune.com, written on the 13th of November 2022. Could Sam Bankman-Fried go to prison for the FTX disaster? Written by Jeff John Roberts. The shock over FTX's sudden collapse is turning to anger as it becomes clear that CEO Sam Bankman-Fried used customer funds from the exchange to plug losses in his failing crypto empire. The question now is what the consequences will be for the one-time icon known to everyone as SBF. So this is part of like a Ponzi scheme. A Ponzi scheme is where you collect people's money, you promise these huge returns, and then how you pay these returns is you pay them by new investors. And with my National Savings Club, part of the reason why some of the guys were like, but this is a Ponzi scheme, was because they believed that some of the returns I was offering was from taking new monies from new investors. And that was not true. I was taking money from loans. I was loaning out money at about 20% per month. So if I loan out 1,000 Rand, I make 200 Rand in interest. And I would offer investors 40% per annum, which is ridiculous. But I'm thinking, if I'm making 20% per month, 20% times 12 months is 240%. And that's excluding compounding. Compounding basically means 20%, 1,000 Rand, loaned out at 20% makes 200 Rand interest. And then in the second month, I'm not loaning out 1,000 Rand. I'm loaning out 1,200 Rand at 20%. So like the money grows at a compounded rate and not at a simple rate. Unfortunately, I hadn't factored in the cost of operation. Unfortunately, I was quite naive and optimistic about my bad debts book. Like how many people would not pay, you know? So from there, I lost a lot of money because people were not paying back. And because it was unsecured, that means I wasn't holding any assets. I couldn't sell a person's car, a person's house, or whatever else they'd given me to try and recoup the money. So if someone ran away with my 1,000 Rand, it was gone. And I still have to pay someone their 40% at the end of the year, plus the principal, the money that they invested. And over time, it just became a mess. So the investors that I was paying out from some of the interest I was collecting. Some of the money I was making from selling pigs or breeding pigs, same with the cattle. Some of the money I was making from the meter taxis that were running, Osizweni in Newcastle and also in Johannesburg. Some of the money I was making from some of the returns I was making from some of the small businesses that I'd made. So it wasn't that I was taking money from new investors and then using that to pay out old investors, which is how a Ponzi scheme generally works. So the issue with Sam Bankman-Fried is that he was taking customers' money to plug into losses. Taking good money and then chasing bad money, which is one of the worst things you can kind of do. While there will be civil lawsuits as customers and investors try to recover what's left of FTX's assets, the Justice Department is also reported to be investigating, raising questions of whether the agency will file criminal charges and whether SBF could see the inside of a prison cell. Another quick detour. You've got a situation now with the president of South Africa, Cyril Ramaphosa, with allegedly millions of US dollars at one of his game farms, Iphalaphala, where there's an investigation, you know, and we don't know where that money's coming from, if it could potentially be money laundering. Money laundering is when you're taking money from drugs, from sanctioned countries, from illegal arms deals, and then you're cleaning that money and saying, oh, we've got auctions, Ankole cattle, for example, or other legit businesses. And then you clean that money and then you move it. People sometimes use game farming. Some people are using cryptocurrencies to clean money. Some people use literal laundromats. You know, so you take, the mafia used to do it in America. I think the Italians in New York would take money from drugs, open up these laundromats, and in the laundromats, they kind of clean the money. Not clean it in the washing machine, but use the laundromats as a front. Car washes, shisa nyamas. In South Africa, we've got certain big clubs that are used to clean money, etc., etc. So Cyril Ramaphosa might be involved in something like that. Also important, which is quite sad, is that when the big global recession hit from mortgages in America and it affected the rest of the world, the big bankers, the big politicians did not go to jail and were not held accountable. The people that lost money was the middle class and the poor. The people that had to bail out the big bankers, the politicians, was the middle class and the poor. You know, which is kind of sad. And we're going to keep seeing things like this happen in South Africa. Steinhoff, as I'd mentioned earlier, which was a bad deal by the PIC, the Public Investment Corporation, which holds, I think, 2 or 3 trillion rand of pensioners' money in South Africa on behalf of the government, you know, as well, which, because a big bulk of their money comes from the GEPF, Government Employee Pension Fund. Who's being held accountable there for investing, for not doing due diligence? There's going to be one guy, Marcus Huerta, who's going to take the fall, but there are so many other people involved. Along with The Big Short, watch a movie called Margin Call. Great movie, Margin Call. Please check that out, which also speaks about some of the lack of accountability from some of the bigger guys. Watch a movie called Wall Street, Money Never Sleeps, with Shia LaBeouf and Thanos, Josh Brolin. Brilliant movie there as well. Features Michael Douglas, who was also in the initial Wall Street with Charlie Sheen. So yeah, check those movies out. The first issue, okay, even if the facts may seem damning on the surface, lawyers contacted by Fortune cited two potential obstacles to any criminal conviction, though ones prosecutors could likely overcome. The first is jurisdiction. Since FTX is an offshore business with headquarters in the Bahamas and did not cater to Americans, defense lawyers could argue the actions of its executives are beyond the reach of U.S. law enforcement. For example, Shepherd Bushiri leaves South Africa, goes to Malawi, even though he is wanted in South Africa. South Africa can't just go to Malawi to arrest him. There's something called jurisdiction. Same with the Guptas. The Guptas are out, someone might see them partying somewhere. But if this is a legal law case in South Africa and you've got no jurisdiction in another country, unless that country extradites, basically has some kind of arrangement that, look, we will arrest him on your behalf and then bring him to your country so that he can face charges. You can't do anything. It's fucking crazy. Glencore, which was born of Mark Rich and company, Mark Rich himself was a commodities trader. At some point, he was wanted in America. He was living, I think, in Switzerland. They knew where he was. They knew where he was traveling, where he was living. But because there was no jurisdiction for the Americans, they couldn't touch him. It's quite an interesting part of the law and part of these arrangements. It's almost like you guys, of course, when you fucking harbor a criminal in your own family that's wanted by other people. It's kind of the same kind of situation. The Justice Department, however, is good at finding a nexus linking overseas defendants to American shores, according to Randall Eliason, a former prosecutor who now teaches law at George Washington University. Two other lawyers who spoke to Fortune echoed this view, saying it would likely be easy for prosecutors to find a nexus in the FTX case in the form of a tie between FTX and US banks, emails, stateside meetings, or other interactions. So there's something called substance over form. As much as your headquarters are in Mauritius or the Isle of Man or some other tax haven, if the bulk of your operations have actually been in another country, or your banks are in that country, your meetings are there, they might be able to prove that fundamentally this company was running in America. Some legal terms for you guys to learn that didn't study commercial law or just general law like some of us. The second potential obstacle to a criminal prosecution comes in the form of intent. Specifically, Eliason says that any conviction will turn on whether SBF was not simply incompetent, but whether he deliberately deceived investors. So they need to show that you were maliciously doing this thing. It's almost like murder in the first degree, that is intention to kill, or culpable homicide, which is unintentional, accidental. I'm driving in the road, a kid runs across the highway and I hit them and they die. That's culpable homicide. I killed that person, but it was unintentional. And I may, number one, if they open a case against murder in the first degree, I will be found not guilty because I wasn't intending to kill. I may be found guilty of culpable homicide, but a reasonable man may have in the same instance as me also killed the child. So I may be acquitted of those charges. So similarly here, if they can prove that Sam Bankman-Fried intentionally knew he was taking people's money to plug in losses without disclosure and without consent, then that's a huge crime. If it was accidental, for example, the bank is taking investors' money, they're investing it somewhere in a Steinhoff, they don't really know that Steinhoff is running at a loss, they don't know that maybe the ANC government is using this money for corruption, maybe at Eskom, etc. If it's accidental, then a PIC, then a Christo Visa, then a Bruno Steinhoff, they are normally found not guilty. You guys didn't know that this money was being used for financial crimes, so to speak. Mismanaging your company and losing a bunch of other people's money is not criminal. Very important. Mismanaging your company and losing a bunch of other people's money is not criminal. It happens all the time. For a criminal case, there has to be deception, he said. Eliason added that he was not familiar with the details of the FTX debacle, but that prosecutors can show deception by means of something like a smoking gun communication or by showing a pattern of behavior that points to fraudulent intent. Very, very interesting thoughts. I don't think I want to speak further about this. You guys can go and read some of these articles. You can read about Sam Bankman-Fried. You can read about the competitor Binance, which was trying to help Sam get out, but then they pulled out at the last minute. For me, I think the major reason why I was making this video is obviously this is derivatives and it's not directly trading cryptos. A derivative is, if you watch The Big Short, they explain it. It's literally, you've got an asset class like a property, and then derivatives are derived from, that hence the derivative, derived from the main asset. So you've got these shares, and then someone has a derivative, which is derived from the shares. Like I said, it's these complicated instruments that people have created. So Orlando Pirates and Kaizer Chiefs are playing each other. People bet on the game. Sure, it's there. Then people bet on the people that bet on the outcomes of the game. Now you're deriving from an initial bet something else, which becomes a new instrument. Can be complicated, but that's for the finance guys and for the guys that are deep into trading. The second thing, obviously, I wanted to speak about my book. If you'd like to buy it and read my story on my business failure, very comfortable to speak about it. And I'm hoping very educational for people that want to run business, people that want to use other people's money. Robert Kiyosaki speaks about OPM, using other people's money. And in the various businesses I had, there's some education there about the loans business, some education about Grameen Bank, Professor Mohammed Yunus, which inspired Capitec, about Sahara Pariwa of Subrata Roy in India, huge kind of formal stock fell where they were collecting small monies, etc., etc. I think it's a very educational book. You can hit me up and you can get a copy. And then the other reason was because I still have issues with cryptos. I'm still not convinced. And I apologize to DJ Smoo. I apologize to Great Chabesi. You know, they've been trying to get me into crypto, And I've said to people before, look, we need to study crypto. It's fundamentally important. Because at any given time, we've seen the banks have joined in. At any given time, the people that made the decision to move from the gold standard to fiat currency, which we have now, they may decide at some point for us to switch off fiat or to have a mix of fiat and crypto. So if you don't know what the fuck is happening, you will be left out. So it's important that we educate ourselves on the potential future of money. We know about e-wallets. We know about sending EFTs. We know about cash send. We know about digital money. So let's learn about cryptos in case they become a huge factor in our lives. Blockchain technology is there. It's not only used for cryptocurrencies, but for a whole lot of other things. It uses ledgers. There's transparency. There's like open source software where people can verify and legitimize each other's transactions or moves. It's one of the technologies that hopefully will be used in voting in future, where people can actually validate, yes, I did vote for this person. Yes, as a collective, we did vote for these people. Therefore, it makes sense that the outcomes look like this. Because currently, we just assume that the results of elections are audited. But what if the auditors have been bribed? Sorry, I had a phone call coming in. What if the auditors had been bribed, as an example? So you want to make sure that even with the election outcomes, that you have some kind of clarity. Sorry, same person is trying to call. I'm going to try and finish this video soon. You just want to make sure that there's transparency in what you're doing. So blockchain technology allows for that. And then ledgers, of course, are used for that type of thing. Cryptography comes with coding, comes with encryption, etc., etc. So we need to understand these things. I did computer science, I did information systems. So I've got some kind of basic understanding. And I used to code when I was in banking as well, at APSA and at Standard Bank. But for me, by and large, cryptocurrency is still not the solution that many people claim it is. Number one, it's still linked to the American dollar by and large, whether it's Bitcoin, Ethereum, even if it's FTT, Sam Bankman-Fried. His wealth is still measured in US dollars, not in crypto. So I feel like it is currently still not a genuine alternative to fiat currency. Your wealth is still linked to fiat currency. I think most people currently are treating crypto as like a form of gambling. Let me buy this alternative asset class because it fluctuates like currencies very quickly. I can make a lot of money very quickly. At any time, things can change. My other issue, I don't think it's as transparent as people claim it is. If you look at fiat currency, there's a few people that are very wealthy and then the bulk are not. I see the same thing in crypto. You've got currently crypto billionaires. Of course, they're even billionaires in US dollars. But there's just a few of them. And then most people in crypto are just kind of struggling and at any given time, the value of the cryptos can be determined by people like an Elon Musk tweeting. So I have issues with that type of situation. There currently isn't a huge market where people can trade purely in crypto so that one Bitcoin can buy you something and that valuation is not linked in the slightest to the American dollar, to the euro, to the yen, whatever the case may be. So I don't think crypto is currently the savior that it's claimed to be. And it's going to come out in situations like this. You're also going to find that a lot of regulators are going to come in. The South African Reserve Bank, Central Bank in London, obviously the Federal Reserve in America. You're going to see more people trying to regulate. And they're going to use cases like Sam Bankman-Fried as a case study and be like, but do you guys want a similar situation? We have to regulate. Once they regulate, it is no different to the rand, to the kwacha, to the naira. It becomes literally the same situation. So I'm still not sold on cryptos. But like I said, we need to understand, learn cryptos. If you can spare 100 rand, 1,000 rand, maybe buy some cryptos. Look at how it works, how it fluctuates. Of course, like I said, it's still linked to fiat. But then maybe trade. You know, I was reading an article recently by one of our finance websites in South Africa. I just forgot which one. I don't know if it was MoneyWeb or Business Tech. But they were speaking about how they went to and buy from a Pick and Pay. There was a Pick and Pay that was piloting that you can now buy with cryptos. And they went and they bought groceries with crypto. So they were like, this thing is working. I've said before that I think we need to innovate beyond cryptography, beyond encryption, beyond these fancy computers that charge a lot of energy. Even though I know Ethereum has done a lot of good work in reducing some of the energy usage that they have. We need to come up with our own valuation techniques. Justin Timberlake in the movie In Time came up, or the movie itself is a great concept movie on using time as a valuation, buying things with time instead of money. What about labor? How do we manage labor? Is it only based on the money that we have now? Back in the day, some Africans would use cows as valuation. They would use goats, sheep, chickens as valuation tools. Before that, people would use seashells. People would use fancy rocks. Of course, we use gold and diamonds at some point. Gold, diamonds, and silver are worthless. You know, if we're hungry, you can't eat a gold bar. You can't swallow pieces of diamonds. We use them as a tool of exchange, as a medium of exchange, and for some people as a store of value. Fiat currency has proven that it's not really great. It's been abused and corrupted by many people. Cryptocurrency for me is currently showing similar trends, in particular because it's linked to fiat. What will the future look like? I'm not sure. But the challenge is to us, can we create new alternative valuation methods where maybe a smile is worth a meal, maybe a hug is worth something, you know, or some other way. We don't always need to be told by some mysterious Japanese men we've never heard of and that no one's seen. We don't need to hear from an America, from a Europe, from a Hong Kong, you know, from a France. We don't need to hear from them. We can come up with our own valuation methods, even if it's within a community. You can have your own currency. Oranje's got the Ora, for example. I know there's a place in the UK where the town has their own currency to try and get people in the town to buy from each other. But maybe you and your family can do the same thing. Maybe you and your own community. Whether it is physical notes, maybe it's digital currency, maybe it's your own crypto coin, or maybe it's some other unique valuation. What is our community rich in? Is it oil, like the Middle East? Is it cattle? Is it other mining commodities? Is our community amazing at labor? Maybe we're intelligent like the South Koreans, because they've built their wealth with the Hyundai, with the Samsung, with the Kia. They've literally become wealthy because of mind and not commodities. They're not really a big country. So what is your value add and what's unique in your community and your family that you can trade with and then value that at a certain level? Of course, you can peg it with other currencies in the world, or you can peg it with other physical goods or services in other countries. The challenge is on us, but we'll see how it goes. Good luck to Sam. I heard that he might be in the Bahamas currently. People are looking for him. People fucking want to slit his throat. But I hope everything goes well for him. I hope we learn a lot from this. I hope Binance is going to teach us a lot. We've got the South African Luno Exchange for Trading, which is under, last I checked, Remgro of Johan Rupert. I see Siya Kolisi has become the face of Luno. But we need to have these conversations, and they need to be as simplistic as possible. We've got people that don't understand the difference between simple interest and compound interest. People that don't understand what is a return on investment, a return on assets, that's ROI, ROA. The difference between sales, turnover, income, of which there's none. What is gross profit? What is net profit? What is a margin? You know, what is the difference between expenses and liabilities? There's so much we lack in just basic financial literacy. And now we're getting all of these complex ideas being brought in. We'll see how those go, but let's carry on with these conversations. Let's learn. Let's be curious. Let's ask questions and learn from each other. Pen you all the black pen. I know this video is a bit long, but I hope it was educational for you. And don't forget to buy a copy of my book to learn about my personal business finance money story. Love you guys very much. Cheers.